Heard it's Palm Sunday this morning, and we're talking about Noah. Well, not exactly. I know Rob thoroughly recommended the film last week, I think, didn't he? So I've saved my £9, and I'll probably get a nice bottle of red wine and something else. It is strange, isn't it, when filmmakers seem to think that they have to change the biblical story somehow to make it interesting. Make it more exciting. And I believe, not having seen the film, that's what the filmmakers have done. Helen and I were out in the week last week walking along the canal near Nelson Pit. You probably know it. It's flat. And we could have a nice long walk and we had a cup of tea in the, just by that little bridge. Had a little cup of tea there. And Helen and I were nattering. And I was earwigging a conversation. These two blokes were talking, and I was earwigging while Helen was talking to me. Sorry, Helen. And my ears pricked up when I heard them talking about RE in schools. Back in the day, these two old boys, reminiscing. And this guy said that he thought the stuff in the Bible was just a bunch of stories made up with no, bits tacked on the end. He said a bit like a fairy story. He said, it's got no relevance to me today in my life. It doesn't mean anything. And that genuinely is the opinion of the world out there, of what occurs between the pages of the Bible. Do you know, if we approached non-biblical history in the same fashion, we'd be laughed at. And nobody seems to think that's a bunch of made-up stories. Any more than you consider a recent biography on Thomas Cranmer a bunch of stories, even though it was written 500 years after Thomas Cranmer lived. Yet when it comes to the New Testament, and when it comes to Jesus, we've got loads of evidence. There's hundreds, literally hundreds of manuscripts to attest what is written in the New Testament. And yet, often we can sign it to the dustbin without any thought whatsoever. Jesus seemed to think that Noah was a real person, as did others in the New Testament. This is mentioned in Matthew, he's mentioned in Luke, he's mentioned in Hebrews, he's mentioned in 1 and 2 Peter. In Hebrews, he's mentioned as an example of faith, who believed God, who took God at his word, whose belief in God resulted in some kind of action. God wasn't a theological doctrine. His faith in God drove him to do something, to build an ark. And that's exactly what James says in his letter. He says, faith without works is dead. If we don't act on our faith, then what's the point of it? And that's a challenge, isn't it, to us this morning. Our Christian faith is not something that's just personal. Of course it is personal, but it's not just personal. It should affect the way we live. Does your faith affect the way you live? Does my faith affect the way I live? Or is it just another leisure activity? When it matters, how does my faith make a difference? Do people see Jesus in me? All the references to Noah in the New Testament, including those given by Jesus himself, are to do with final salvation, to do with what happens at the end, the very end. Matthew 24:37, verse 37, Jesus says, "For as in the days of Noah, so will be the coming of the Son of Man. For as in those days before the flood, they were eating and drinking, marrying and being given in marriage until the day Noah entered the ark. And they knew nothing until the flood came and swept them all away. So too will be the coming of the Son of Man. Ooh, strong stuff, isn't it? So as in the days of Noah. So when the flood came, it was sudden and instantaneous. It was utterly impossible not to see. And Jesus tells us that it will be exactly the same when he comes again. It will not be invisible. It will be universally visible. We won't miss it. And just as in Noah's time, there was a period of waiting from the time when God called Noah to make the ark to the time when the flood came. So Jesus is saying, in the same way, there's going to be a long period of waiting until he comes again. And that waiting is a warning. That period is a time to listen. And that period is now. A warning. The thing is, if you're not listening to a warning, you're not going to be able to prepare. Jesus tells us in verse 42 to keep awake, for you don't know what day your Lord is coming. So how might people be unprepared or asleep? I guess it's there in verse 38, when Jesus says that people were eating and drinking and marrying and giving in marriage. They were going about their normal lives, their normal daily lives. Now, these things aren't wrong. Of course they're not. It doesn't mean I don't have a drink. It doesn't mean I don't go to a wedding. We had a fantastic wedding last week. My son got married. It was absolutely brilliant. It doesn't mean we don't enjoy those things. But if our preoccupation is that only, potentially engrossed and wrapped up in all the activities of life, which in themselves are okay, but if we exclude God, his gospel and his warnings while we're engaged in those activities, then clearly we're not prepared when Jesus comes again. You see, what materialism does is it lulls us into thinking about nothing else. It kind of anesthetizes our souls. So we disregard Jesus' warnings as we become engrossed and wrapped up in the latest gadget, fashion, the latest activities, or whatever else it might be. And that's easy to do, isn't it? Believe me, I know. And for those of us who do not believe in God, who don't believe the gospel, who don't believe the good news of Jesus, that Jesus gave his life for you so that we can have that relationship that we were designed to have as human beings, for those, how can you be ready? How will you be ready when he returns if you don't believe? And so it will sweep over us without us even knowing, just as the flood did in Noah's time. How sobering. So Jesus warns us to be prepared. I remember as a 15-year-old boy hanging around with a bunch of lads, like you do. Mostly getting up to no good, I have to say, and mostly revolving around drink. And there's one Jack the Lad, one lad called Lenny Bertham. You know, the kind who likes to be the center of attention. Well, I didn't go on the trip to the Lake District. The trip in the summer, where they trekked over the hills from the youth hostel down to the pub in the village on the other side of the Rhino's Pass. They'd had way too much to drink that night, my friend told me. Lenny was bringing up the rear in a drunken state. He disappeared. They couldn't find him. Lenny, in his drunken stupor, had tripped, fallen down a steep slope, smacked his head on a rock, and fell into a tarn and drowned. When I heard about it, I couldn't believe it. It was so sudden, so unexpected. And in many ways, I suppose that's what Jesus means. When he comes again, if we're still alive, it'll be unexpected. Or if we face him when we die, it may also be unexpected. Whichever, it's unexpected. So Jesus says, it's worth being prepared. Sounds a bit morbid, doesn't it, to be talking like this on a Sunday morning with the sun shining outside? But you know, these things matter. You see, the thing is, when Jesus comes, he will sweep away evil as well, and evil people. You see, on Palm Sunday, Jesus came, meek and mild, riding on a donkey. A few days later, he was nailed to a cross. He was not recognized as the king. He was not recognized as Messiah or Savior. But when he comes, he will come again in judgment. And this time, everyone will recognize him. It's not pleasant, is it, to talk about judgment? But it will happen. Why? Because God cares. God's interested and cares about justice. He wants to see justice done. What kind of God do we believe in? Will he do nothing about evil? Will he do nothing about injustice? Isn't that what people cry out for? Why does God allow this? Why does God allow that? Why does God allow suffering? How many times have we heard those questions? You know, many think Jimmy Savile's got away with it. Many think Jimmy Savile and others have got away with it because they died before justice on this earth. Not at all. That's not what Jesus says. Because every person must give an account of their lives before a holy God. And so we need to be prepared to heed those warnings. The warning that Jesus gives, foreshadowed, if you like, in Noah and the flood. God will intervene. The Son of Man, Jesus, will come again. Justice will be done. But for now, a period of waiting. To allow people to turn. But then, the unexpected hour. So are we prepared? Are we taking care of our spiritual lives? Are we following Jesus so that we will be saved? What are we saved from? We're saved from the wrath of God. God's anger at everything that is evil. There are a number of people who will refuse to take seriously the wrath of God. We'd rather have some sort of illogical sentimentality where grandma is a star looking down over us from heaven, even though poor old grandma was the most unpleasant person you could imagine. You see, we can't say that we believe in Jesus and I'm waiting for him to come from heaven to rescue me from the coming wrath and then say in the same breath that those who reject Jesus are not in danger at all or that they would not come to any harm at all. These are difficult things, aren't they? They're difficult things. But we need to take them seriously. And what this should do is spur us on. Spur us on to tell others about the good news of Jesus. That actually when we believe in him, we trust in him, we're locked up safe with him on that day. Locked up safe. As if in the ark. So are we prepared? Or are we engrossed in those things which in themselves are good, but become a huge distraction? Are we like the man at Nelson Pitt, who thinks that there's no relevance for him at all, and so by default is unprepared and in danger of being swept away? Palm Sunday, people weren't ready for Jesus. They were cheering a Messiah of their own making into Jerusalem that day. Soon to turn and condemn and shout, "Crucify him, crucify him." Let's not fall into the same trap, inventing a Jesus of our own making, some kind of Father Christmas God, who just brings us nice presents whenever we ask. Let's be prepared and heed the warnings. He warns us because he loves us and wants us all to turn to him. Turn to him and be saved. And the cross, that palm cross, that cross is the starting point. There is a means by which we can be saved and rescued. Jesus. It's God's initiative.